How might last night's elections affect our economy and our national debt?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Morning Open, our look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. There have been just a few Tea Party election victories, but they may send Congress a message about cutting the budget deficit. That's coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Off just a little, the Dow Industrial's down 17 points, about a tenth of a percent or so, at 10,509. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are down about three-tenths of a percent. The Japanese government stepped in today and took the rare action of weakening the yen, and the Nikkei index jumped 2%. Let's say good morning to Diane Lim Rogers. She's chief economist at the Concord Coalition, a nonpartisan group dedicated to a balanced budget. Morning, Diane.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So the Tea Party got another victory last night against a moderate Republican in Delaware. Overall, how does the voting affect your top priority, a balanced federal budget?
Well, I actually think it's bad news for a couple reasons. I think, first of all, the pool of moderate members of Congress seems to be rapidly dwindling. And, of course, we need people in the center to work on bipartisan policies that would actually achieve some fiscal discipline, because that's what it takes, is some balance on both sides, some cuts in spending and some increases in taxes. I also think that the Tea Party in particular, their message has been primarily low taxes. They also argue that they're for a low deficit, but unfortunately they don't really seem to be proposing spending side policies that would actually do much to help that equation.
Well, I think the argument is that cutting taxes would force politicians to find spending cuts, and that tax cuts are exactly what the economy needs right now. What do you think?
Well, first of all, we've experienced most of the tax cuts we're contemplating continuing over the past decade in the form of the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts. It didn't work to starve the beast over the past 10 years, so I don't know why it should affect, you know, it should work going forward when our spending needs are going to just grow.
Okay. Diane Lim Rogers, that's our time, chief economist at the Concord Coalition, and she blogs at economistmom.com. Thank you, Diane.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com. And by Reputation Defender, protecting online privacy by monitoring the web and removing your personal data from websites that sell it. ReputationDefender.com/market.
It seems being out of shape isn't just bad for your heart and your medical bills, it's bad for the whole economy. That's according to a new study on American obesity. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
With more than two-thirds of Americans tipping the scales as overweight or obese, the economic impact spreads well beyond medical costs. Worker productivity is also suffering, says Ross Hammond of the Brookings Institution.
Absenteeism and disability in the workforce, those could add up to as high as $66 billion a year.
There are environmental costs as well.
Much higher levels of fuel use for transporting heavier passengers, both on airlines and passenger vehicles.
And more greenhouse gases, because the humans are bigger and we transport more food to feed them. They also generate more organic waste, but let's not go there first thing in the morning. There are solutions out there, says Matt Lerner of WalkScore, which ranks cities based on how easily you can get around.
People who live in walkable neighborhoods, on average, weigh 7 pounds less
than folks in neighborhoods where you have to drive to stock up on more chips and guacamole. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
If you want to save a little money, you could travel by bus instead of airplane, for example, but look out for hidden fees. Here's your lookout man, Los Angeles Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Morning, David.
Good morning.
I didn't know this. Greyhound charges a gift ticket fee?
You're online. You're buying your ticket. If you come across a thing that says, is the credit card holder doing the traveling? If you say yes, you're good. If you say no, for instance, if you're buying the ticket for a son, a daughter, a friend, they will slap that $18 fee on.
Why? How does it cost them more when I buy a ticket for someone else?
And that's sure a good question. And I sure put that to Greyhound. And here's their defense. They say, on the one hand, it's an anti-fraud fee. It helps to cover the expenses they face in not just protecting customers, but protecting the company from credit card fraud. Okay.
All right.
And then they also say it's a handling fee because whoever's actually doing the traveling has to actually, show up at a bus depot and pick up the tickets. You would think that's a service they've been providing since time immemorial. Then when you look closer, you see that this doesn't really stand up to scrutiny.
Why is that?
That's because the anti-fraud measure is being imposed willy-nilly. For example, if you say you're doing the traveling yourself, there is no fee attached. Well, wait a minute. Anyone using a credit card or buying online poses the same risk of fraud as anyone else. So why is it that some tickets face this anti-fraud charge and others don't? And then the handling charge, $18. Are you kidding me?
I'm always in the position of defending these fees to you, David. How about this? The fees don't have to literally reflect a new cost to the retailer. The model is you charge extra for anything out of the ordinary. That keeps your basic product free or cheap for everybody else.
Well, you could say that, but their website all but encourages you to lie because you come across the part where it says, is the credit card holder doing the traveling? Well, if you truthfully say, yes, it's me, great, you avoid the fee. But if you want to avoid the fee, what Greyhound says you should do is say you're doing the traveling, buy it, and then send the ticket
mail
to somebody
else.
Mail
it to the person who's traveling.
Exactly. But wait a minute. So they're telling you that you need to lie to avoid the fee. What kind of company does that?
One that just got talked about on the radio.
Okay, we'll give them that much.
David Lazarus, Los Angeles Times consumer columnist. Thank you.
Leave the driving to me.
Okay. And finally, the Cartoon Network Nicktoons is planning a new show whose characters started out as commercials. The cartoon's called Zevo 3, and the characters were created to market the Skechers line of shoes. The show's villain is Dr. Stanley K. Foote, also known as Stankfoot.
Nothing will go wrong, or I will personally remove your head from your body.
The advocacy group Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood has complained to the FCC that if Zevo 3 is allowed on the air, it could pave the way for kids' shows that are essentially 30-minute ads. Unlike, say, the Care Bears and Transformers, and I think my mom had a Howdy Doody puppet. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.